About a week ago, Nissan issued a recall affecting over 400,000 of its vehicles with the 1.5-liter and 2-liter VC, or variable compression turbo, engines. These can be found in the Nissan Altima, the Rogue, the Infiniti QX50, and the QX55, which I didn't even know was a thing. This recall alleges that the bearings inside of this engine have a defect and can come apart, resulting in power loss or catastrophic engine failure with a risk of a crash. I've torn down two of these VC turbo engines on this channel so far, both of them being the 1.5-liter 3-cylinders out of a 21-up Rogue, and one of those engines' failure modes aligned perfectly, exactly, with this recall. But I've never torn down a 2-liter one, and that's what we're going to do today. We're going to tear down this 2-liter VC turbo engine out of a 2019 QX50 with just 98,000 miles on it, and I am told that it was a running engine and that it is bad. The 2-liter VC turbo engine, also known as the KR20DDET, came out for the 2019 model year in both the Nissan Altima and the Infiniti QX50. This being the first model year of engines, in my experience, those usually have the most problems. They usually get things ironed out as time goes on, unless, of course, you're General Motors, and then it just gets worse with time. This produces 268 horsepower, 280 pound-feet of torque, which is less than the outgoing V6. It makes less power. However, power may not have been their motivation behind this. It could have been emissions. It could have been fuel economy, which, if it was the latter, not so glowing reviews on the internet. And of course, every one of these 2-liter VC turbo engines is paired with a soul-sucking CVT transmission. In the time that this engine was developed, Nissan used, or maybe they still do, the tagline, "Innovation that excites." And there's not a whole lot to be excited about with this engine, especially now that they're all recalled. The first thing I'd like to do is see how the engine feels when it turns over. I know this engine runs, so it should turn all the way over. But I want to know if, wait, Uncle Rodney doesn't live in this engine. It's Cousin Link. Let's see how it feels. I don't hear any bad noises. I don't feel any compression. Very minor compression. So these engines go between 8-to-1 compression at the low side to 14-to-1 on the high side. And this could be an 8-to-1 land. It still doesn't feel very, very taut. Before we do the plugs, let's get this intake tube out of the way. There we are. The second first thing I'd like to do is pull the coils so we can inspect the plugs. Already? Battery on.
I'm happy.
I guess I'm gonna have to just use the impact. I don't like doing that on plugs, but here we go. What is going on here? Can I have that back, please? That makes no sense. Looks like there's just a bunch of carbon on the threads. So the plugs don't look so great. They're not terrible, and they're all even, which is nice to see. I think they've been in there for a while. They might be original. Now that the spark plugs are out, let's see if it changes the way this feels. A lot of times, having compression will mask engine noises. Let's see here. I still don't hear anything. Next, we're gonna work on the turbocharger. I'm gonna remove the oil feed line. The coolant lines. And since the oil return is already gone, let's remove the turbo from the cylinder head. What is going on with you? Are all my batteries low? Maybe. The batteries on this aren't low. And the turbo is off. In order to get a good look at the turbo, let's go remove the inlet pipe. See here. Oh, okay. It's got a little bit of lateral shaft play. The wheels don't hit the housing. I think we found the problem. It's upside down though. The impeller wheel looks pretty good. The edges of the fins are a little rough, but that could be dirt and not wear. I bet this is fine. I bet this turbo is just fine. On the exhaust side of the turbo, there's not a ton of play. On the wastegate, everything looks pretty good. The next thing we're gonna work on is the intake manifold. And you'll notice that a lot of the hardware on here has a ton of corrosion. This is a vehicle out of the Northeast, out of upstate New York. It was in Massachusetts for a period of time. And they treat the roads with salt there like it's going to cure cancer. And this is pretty normal for a Northeast vehicle. I know some of you that lived in the Southwest have never seen anything like this, but this is pretty normal for something out of that area. In the Midwest, it would usually take twice as long for it to look so bad. So just get to zipping some bolts out till parts fall off.
Coolant.
All right, now let's unbolt the intake. Oh, it looks like the dipstick must be removed. It appears to be drained. All right, I think this will come right off. You know, I love to rip on Nissan because they make themselves an easy target, but they do some cool stuff. And one of the things that I really like that they've done with this engine is the fact that it has both port and direct injection. Their benefits of direct injection are great, but it comes with a bunch of side effects that pretty much go away completely when you have port injection in addition. This has both. It's really nice to see on something like this. Well, apparently the port injection is not working because that looks atrocious. Look at how destroyed, look how covered in carbon those valves are. That is not a good sign. Next, I'd like to clean up the back of the engine. We're gonna start with the vacuum pump. And it's off. This part really sucks. Next, I'd like to work on the fuel system, but we have a few brackets to get out of the way first. Let's get the pressure line off the fuel pump. Close my eyes. There's no pressure there. You never know. Oh, it appears the line is holding it in place. So let's crack the other side loose. Ooh, that's in a tricky spot. Why did they do this? All right, high pressure pump. Removed. Next, more brackets. You got it. While we're in the neighborhood, let's get this coolant pipe. I mean, that's out of the way. Can I take this off, please? Is it gonna leak coolant everywhere? No. That's a surprise. Now, it is time to peel the valve cover off to see what it looks like beneath it. It's also time to get the right size socket. Oh, blue. Probably not a good place to pry. It's not gonna stop me though. Well, not terrible so far. So I did a Carfax on this vehicle, which admittedly doesn't always tell you everything that's been done. If you change your oil yourself, it doesn't show up on there, but this thing had routine maintenance. I'm not gonna say it was stellar or early, but it did have routine maintenance, and it was mostly serviced at a couple different dealerships in the Northeast. So I don't really see anything jumping out at me. The oil doesn't seem to have a bunch of metal suspended in it, at least not in the top of the engine. Nothing alarming yet. This engine uses electronically controlled and electronically driven variable valve timing on the intake cam, and electronically controlled oil pressure driven variable valve timing on the exhaust cam. Now, because it's oil pressure driven, it has a solenoid on it, and these are usually really good at collecting the suspended metal in the oil, if there is any. So we're gonna go ahead and pull this out and take a look to see if it's caked or if it's clean. So it's actually clean. Although I don't see any screens on this, and that's usually where you would find the metal. I don't see any. Now it's time to tear the timing cover off of it. We're gonna start with this bracket. And the crank pulley. Oh, this is gonna be fun. Let's get the weighted socket for this one. This should do it, I hope. That did it. Let's go ahead and get this off. That was easy. Next, the belt tensioner. Unfortunately, I can't remove the timing cover complete because I have to basically remove everything in order. This has to come off, and then I can get the timing cover off. This blocks bolts to this, so I have to take this off of late model car things. And there's quite a bit of wear in there. Look at all this junk. Look at that. I just performed a service to it. Oh, we're oozing. Engine goo is coming out. It's bleeding. Oh, and there's even bolts behind this thing. Now, I'm gonna start zipping out timing cover bolts in ascending order, which means smallest bolts first, largest bolts last. Whether that's correct or not, I couldn't tell you, but that's what we're gonna do. And in the wash. I fully expect this thing to puke everywhere as soon as I get this timing cover off, so I've got the pan underneath it. I'm running out of palm space. I don't think I missed any of those. But of course, we have a bracket. I did miss one. You guys saw that, I didn't see it. And now to use a 13 millimeter socket on a Nissan product. I'm shaking my head. I do believe I've extracted all of the bolts. And now it's time to start prying on the timing cover, ever so carefully, of course. Oh, this is gonna come off nice. At least it does up there. That's the bell that it's done. Unfortunately, it's a little premature. I think we're caught on this dowel over here. There we are. And there's a timing system. And the inside of the timing cover mirrors the inside of the engine. This part doesn't look like it was so well maintained. So I don't see anything too awful right off the get-go. Obviously, this thing had long oil change intervals because of the amount of varnish in here. I've seen worse. I don't see sludge or anything like that, but it's not as clean as the last VC turbo engine we tore down, which was steam cleaned everywhere from the blown head gasket. I don't see any issues jumping out at me. There's our control shaft, that's the crankshaft, part of the VC system, which we'll get into once we get into that part of the engine. We're gonna start peeling the timing system off, and we're gonna start with the tensioner. Ooh, that had some oomph behind it, and it's leaking. Now we'll remove the guides and rail. Go ahead and carefully remove this beautiful chain if we can. Just wanna make sure there's no tension on it. It doesn't appear to be. Nice. And the rails look really nice. I don't see any issues with these. Before we go cramming bolts loose, we've got a few brackets that are just a little in the way. Ooh, that's unhappy. It's fine. Much better. Now there's one interesting thing about this engine that's different than the three-cylinder variant, and that is that the port injectors, the fact it has them, are bolted to this cam tower, cam plate. I'm not sure what Nissan calls it, but many manufacturers have gone to this design. So I'm gonna need to remove the port injection rail bolts, probably the rail with injectors as well. That's what we're going to do next. I'm We're getting there. This is the way to do it in the shop manual, I'm pretty sure. Time to cram the tower bolts loose. Now hopefully I can get this cracked loose without bolts going flying everywhere, but we'll see. Yeah, it's not so bad. Normally if I'm going to sell a cylinder head and I'd like to sell it complete, this corner is unhappy. That could have been bad, but it wasn't. All right, we've got the roller lifter for the high pressure pump. Okay, that is loose. And the real question is, can I remove the cams? It's tight. There's the exhaust cam. This should do it. Yeah, that was the least violent way. Oh, but I've run into the same issue with the three cylinder. I thought this would be better since it's in an Infiniti and not a Smaltima or Taltima. In order to remove the cam, you have to remove some of the bolts. I'm going to try with two of them that hold this here. If these had been countersunk, this would not have been an issue, but since they're not, they are. So then what we do is we rotate this. And the cam comes out. So the cylinder head, the journals in the head look pretty good. I don't see anything jumping out at me. The camshafts also look pretty good. Definitely serviceable components. I don't see any signs of oil starvation. This one's got a little bit of wear right there. Not bad. I don't think that would cause an issue. And the upper cam tower, it's got, I would say, moderate wear at worst. Let's zoom in. I would say that's probably moderate, and that might be a stretch. It's probably light wear. Focus on the right thing, camera. There you go. And not too bad. Next, we're going to remove this electronic thermostat water valve. I don't know what Nissan calls it, but that's what it is. Go ahead and get this fuel line while we're here. Now it's time for, you guessed it, more brackets. And it is time for the dipstick tube to be removed. Think happy thoughts. Gonna be okay. Already? Did I miss a bolt on this? Yes. Much easier when all the bolts are out. Give it to me.
Why am I moving? Come back.
I win. Now it is time to crack the head bolts loose. The brakes are on. Let's put all of the brakes on. What is going on here? Those are very tight. Such violence. And I'm tired now. All right, let's zip these head bolts out. And now we remove its head. So here's the head gasket. It actually looks good. Very gaskety. And wipe this out so we can get a better look at these two bores. So the bores look really nice. And I shouldn't have said anything. I don't know what that is, but that's not good. I don't know that I can feel that, but I don't see a lot of vertical wear. There's some like pitting in this one. You guys see that right down there? But more importantly, all of the pistons look the same. Nothing looks cleaner than another, and I don't see any marks from making contact with the cylinder head or valves. And that is mirrored with the cylinder head. This all looks really good, nice and even. So far, no major trouble. It's about time we had some science in this video. It didn't sound very good the first time. I missed. And it could be the piston rocking back and forth. That's what that is. So, I'm not going to say we have connecting rods because this engine doesn't have connecting rods. All right, now we're going to turn the engine over and drain all the engine juice into the pan, hopefully, not around the pan. And we can start removing components from the bottom end. Let's see what comes out of this. Blue coolant. And a little bit of oil. A lot bit of oil. Not too much. Probably should have turned that one over the other direction. Unlike the three-cylinder counterpart, the four-cylinder has a metal oil pan. But the location of the drain bolt is still not at the bottom. I don't understand how hard it is to do that, but I am not an engineer. Oh, this has been off before. Someone's been here. Okay. So someone clearly had this thing removed, and I assume that's for inspection purposes. So the inside of the pan is pretty clean. There seems to be some sediment built up here, but it's not loose. Unfortunately, like I said earlier, there's where the drain bolt is and there's the bottom of the pan. That leaves probably half a quart. That's kind of dumb, guys. Easy to rectify that situation by putting the drain bolt right here in the bottom, you know, where you would expect it to be. So taking a look around, it looks very similar to the three-cylinder. I don't see anything too awful, but look inside there. Look at that shiny, hold on. Look at that shiny little sliver of metal in the pan. That doesn't go there. I'm hoping that once we get that off, I can pull that apart or at least shake all the debris out of it, which is exactly what we're gonna do. So we're gonna move this pickup. Okay, dokie. I have no idea if anything's gonna come out, but. I don't see anything coming out. I could break this open, maybe. But I don't really think this thing is full of junk. But there's clearly a piece of metal in there, so. Not sure. Now we're going to remove this retainer bracket. So this keeps the pin for the A-link attached to the control shaft. So we're gonna get this off. I said we're gonna get this. Okay, blue. Oh, it has dowels. And like that, we're off. I think this is in the wrong position to remove the pin, because this bolt is in the way. In order to get this pin all the way out, I need to remove this 12-point bolt, which is very tight. Now we should be able to slide that over. Perfect. I'm gonna just loosely bolt this back together. Next, I'm gonna remove the actuator, which is also the oil filter housing. Once I get a 13-millimeter socket, come on, Nissan, 13s. I And there's the actuator with the A-link. Next, we can remove the oil pump. Oh, I think I did that on the last one. I think I can just... Wow. Why is everything so dang tight? Let's see, can we get it out? I bet it's a lot easier to come out now. And there's the oil pump. Unfortunately, I couldn't get the nut off the shaft, which means that I likely can't get this taken apart. We'll try a little bit later. All right, let's go ahead and crack the oil pan bolts loose. All right, let's see if we can pop this up. And now you can see the variable compression system without the upper oil pan on it. Oh, got a little oil leak now that I pulled the rear main seal out. All right, I'll show you how this kind of works. That's it right there. Those are the two ranges. That's high compression, that's lower compression. You can see these links. So the arm that went to this control shaft is called the A-link. This is the control shaft. This is the C-link. This is the U-link, excuse me, the L-link. And the U-link is what we would normally call a connecting rod. It all spells a clue. It's kind of ironic. I'm going to go ahead and actuate the control shaft with it this way so you can see the difference in height. You see how all the rods and pistons go up? That's the difference between 8-to-1 and 14-to-1. Here, let's turn this crankshaft over so that the pistons go to the top of the bore so you can really see the difference. All right, the center two are at the top of their bore. I believe that is in high compression. And that's how much further they drop down in the bore. About 1/4 inch. Maybe a little more. That's the difference in compression ratio. The first thing I'm going to do is unbolt all of the C-links from the control shaft. Oh, those are really tight. All right, now I'm going to zip all of those loose. And try to keep these in order here. All right, now we're going to unbolt the control shaft caps. And now we can remove the control shaft. Next, we're going to unbolt the main cap bolts. There's only one left. We're going to start unbolting the links so that we can remove the pistons and links because this has no connecting rods. Remember, no rods. No Uncle Rodney. So that's how that side comes out. And now I have everything turned so that I can't incidentally or accidentally push the piston outside of the bore, which has jammed me up on the three-cylinder engines before. The other bolt is right here. I know it's crazy, but that's the way it is. Swing it around the other way and get the other one loose. I got my hand underneath it so it doesn't go flying. See what it takes to push this out. Not very difficult. Oh, don't want to do that and push. Will that come out of the block all the way? No, it won't. Okay, so this cannot, I'm gonna have to rotate the whole crankshaft. I'm gonna be very careful that I don't push or accidentally push a rod and piston out of the top of the bore, because then the rings will get caught on the deck of the block. There, see, now I can get to the other one. That's the goal. These are very tight. On to cylinder three. Wow, that is very tight. This is either I'm getting weaker or more tired. Onto the last cylinder. This is in a position where, oh, I done did it. I got it caught outside of the, I did it to myself, but it's okay. I think we can get ourselves out of this. All right, that one's loose. All right, I got it all sorted out. It's fine. Well, we can pull the crankshaft out. And the final link and piston are out. All right, let's take a look at this mess of parts. So here's your piston, U, L, C, and the A-link was attached to the actuator. I think that's why it's called the A-link. So first we're gonna look at the, what you would normally call a connecting rod bearing. It's not a connecting rod bearing. And these are really heavily worn. They are through the first layer, almost through that second layer. They don't look good, but they are consistently terrible, if there's anything to be happy about. Now this is the control shaft bearings. And I believe these come looking like this. I don't think this is excess wear. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the control shaft doesn't spin all the way around. It just moves between the two positions, so it doesn't rotate. So you're not really going to see the same amount of wear to those bearings. The pistons, pretty heavy skirt wear. Oil control rings, not really too bad. Pistons have some pretty interesting shapes on them. I haven't seen that before. But I don't see anything too terrible. Like, all of this, it just looks like a really high mileage engine. certainly not something that has, you know, less than 100,000 miles. You would never, if you showed me all these parts, I would guess this is a 200 to 250,000 mile engine, not sub 100,000 miles with dealer maintenance. I don't see any damage to any of these components. This all looks pretty good. Now here's our control shaft. This looks really nice. No issues there. And what's odd is the three-cylinder variants. I've sold every control shaft from both of the teardowns. I can't imagine someone needing this, but I sold them. Then you've got the rest of the bearings. So these are control shaft main bearings. And these are our crankshaft. It's still called a crankshaft main bearings. These look excellent. These all look really nice. No major damage. The crankshaft, it looks all right. I'm not going to call it perfect. It could definitely use a polish. A couple of these journals, they're actually kind of dirty. See if I can clean these up a little bit. It looks nice, but there are a few grooves. Let's see if I can zoom in on them. There you go. Again, it's not perfect. Not something that I think would make any kind of audible noise or drastically affect the way it runs. But if you're going to install this, you should definitely take it to the machine shop and have them go over it. And as a reminder, I don't take these engines apart for the sake of needing things to do. I sell parts. So if you need any parts out of this thing, or if you want one of these crazy things for your desk, these make incredible conversation pieces because they look so different from every other engine. That you can email us. I'll leave our email in the video description. And the bores, there's quite a bit of glazing and wear in these things. I mean, they look pretty good. Like, there's not a lot of vertical damage. Shouldn't have said anything. There's a little bit right there. I still think it's... Oh, that one's kind of deep. I still think it's rather serviceable. Again, this just looks like a high mileage... Oh, that one looks a little worse. This looks like a high mileage engine. And that concludes our tear... I forgot the water pump. Time to take the water pump off. Just give it a little tap. So the water pump looks excellent. Feels nice. No signs of leakage. This is a great condition water pump. This engine was replaced because during a routine oil change, something the dealership did to this vehicle before they put it on the lot for sale, they caught some metal in the oil filter. They found some silver sparkles, the forbidden glitter, which is something you never want to see in an oil filter, ever. Now, the filter did its job, and what I'm told, it wasn't a ton of it, but there is no situation where some metal is okay. Automatic transmissions, rear ends, front differentials, transfer cases, okay. Engines, not okay. That is just waiting for a disaster to happen, and this is a pretty good dealer. They care about what they sell, so they opted to replace the engine before they burden the customer with an engine that who knows how long it would last. Now, one thing is for sure, this engine does not appear to have the miles that this vehicle did, but it has excellent maintenance history, has no reason to look as worn out as it actually looks. It's kind of disheartening. I don't think these engines will last the long haul. I know they're many of them are under recall, and these vehicles will get new engines. But are the engines they're installing any better? Now, I've heard that the latest models with the VC turbo engines... Get out of here, fly. I want to turn into Winnebago Man. I've heard the latest ones don't have this problem, but maybe they're just too new to have this problem. At the same time, I've talked to a lot of dealer techs for Nissan, and a lot of VC turbos come in making all kinds of racket and get replacement engines. This has been going on since apparently these vehicles have been out, which is... kind of what I expected. This is a lot of complication for not a huge payoff. It doesn't get amazing fuel economy. It doesn't make amazing power. I don't know really why they did this. I mean, innovation that excites maybe dealer techs. They probably don't like putting engines in them. Or lawyers. I don't know who gets excited over stuff like this. Now, I do like the technology. The idea is cool. I wish it was implemented into something that people used that was like a weekend driver or some sports car or something on the more exotic side of things. But putting these engines in cars that are owned by most people that do the bare minimum of maintenance, it's a recipe for disaster. I could not recommend any vehicle with one of these VC turbo engines. I could not. So if you'd like to buy any parts out of this for your desk, or if you're one of the unfortunate souls and yours is not covered under this recall, I think it almost all of them are. I'm going to leave our email in the video description. You can also go to importapart.com and peruse our inventory. I've been uploading our parts cards every single week. As always, I love all the comments, all the feedback, and even the criticism. I love it all, and I'll catch you on the next one.